Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the after show. My name is Mike Rose. We are with you on Friday, recording on Friday, October 18th, 2019. Glad to be back with you after a brief holiday hiatus. As always, here on the after show, I am joined by my partner in podcasting crime, Ms. Kelly Guimont. Kelly, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
Yeah, you're hanging in there.
Yeah.
You're a trooper. You're a professional, so you're here. You're doing the show. But you're not at peak performance.
No, I'm recovering from being sick, so I'm getting there. But at least it wasn't like months at a time. I was really down for about a day and a half. So
that's, you know, it's manageable. It's just what's hard, and I think you are a person of this sort who can't just sort of linger in bed because it's the right thing to do. Even when it's the right thing to do. You can't do it.
Yeah, even when it's the right thing to do, like, it's still, no, can I just take my computer and sit in a recliner or something? Like, even that's better than you know, just keep laying in bed, because I'm just not wired to do that. I was never, like, the teenager that slept until noon or anything like that, like, ever.
You were never Ferris Bueller, is what you're saying.
No.
Because we all know Ferris Bueller is my brother. No, not literally. That is not meant to be a factual statement. My brother Rich is not Ferris Bueller, nor is he Matthew Broderick. But when they were younger, when they both were younger, there was an incredible resemblance.
I could see that.
People did stop Rich in the street and say Ferris, which was hilarious.
Tell me, he got business cards printed that said "Richard Rose, Sausage King of Chicago."
No, and but I do think he has an Abe Froman T-shirt somewhere.
It's a moral imperative. If he does not, this gift giving season, you need to make it right.
It's a moral imperative. I was just talking to somebody about Ferris Bueller's Day Off and the whole notion of truancy. You know, that weird relationship to authority. And I think it was a situation where there was a kid who did, in fact, get busted for changing his own grades in the computer system. I was like, wow, that is so Ferris. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then somebody said, stop trying to make so Ferris happen. It's never going to happen. It's like, but it was just literally, never mind.
Well, it was only about 60% Ferris, because Ferris didn't get caught. Nope.
Lost you there for a sec, Kelly. What did you just say?
It's only about 60% Ferris, because Ferris didn't get caught.
It's true. He evaded responsibility for his entire high school career.
Yes.
And you know, no spoilers, but did in fact escape consequences.
Yes.
Art Rooney did not ever catch up with him.
No.
You listen to me, Rooney. I can't do Alan Ruck's amazing, like, Sloan
adult voice.
Adult voice. Oh. This is what is his first name? This is Bill Peterson.
Bill Peterson.
This is Bill Peterson. Oh, I'm Sloan's father. Oh yeah, we've had a terrible loss. Terrible loss.
Oh,
I can't
so
do
good.
It. I can't do it. It's uniquely weird.
Yeah.
And Alan Ruck is in something again now, isn't he?
I'm certain of it.
I think it may be Succession on HBO that he's doing.
Oh, yeah, I think he is.
I think he's in that. I think I've seen him in the trailers for that. I've not watched that yet. I'm just now catching up on Barry, but I hear Succession is very good.
So I'm in exactly the same place. I'm about to try. I'm trying to finish up on Barry and then watch Succession. So that's the boat I'm in as well, as I'm trying to finish up Barry. Barry really took me by surprise. I just really like Bill Hader, and I kind of wanted to see what he would do with something more than a sketch and an Ed Hardy T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh, well, I'll just give Barry a shot and kind of like see. And the first episode just reeled me in immediately. So if you're not watching this, this is totally a thing I think we both recommend, because I adored the first season, and I'm like two episodes in the second season now, I think, and just liking it more all the time. It's really a lot of fun.
I'm about four episodes into the first season, and I gotta say, Anthony Carrigan, who, well, first of all, the cast on that show is amazing. It's like half of the Good Place has shown up. You have Simone and Janet from The Good Place in the acting yes. class. You have as Goran, the Chechen mobster.
Oh, who I love.
You have Bach from Billions. So yes. Axe's lawyer shows up, and he's yes. like two more different characters you could not possibly imagine. So it's hilarious.
Yes.
And then you have the just deliciously weird NoHo Hank.
Oh, he is unapologetically banana pants. It is a delight. I just like I'm sad at points when we go off to acting class and stuff, because I'm like, no, get back to NoHo Hank, because I need to know what he's up to.
We need more NoHo Hank.
Like, and what is he doing? It's so weird. It's amazing. Like, you know, he's just leaving nothing but gnawed upon scenery in his wake. It's just...
It's a spectacular performance. And it's funny, because as soon as I met him, I'm like, oh, I've seen this guy before. I've seen, like, the wacky gangster. I've seen him before. Right. And yet, it's not.
No, you haven't.
You have not seen this dude. And I've now read... So Anthony Carrigan, the actor actually has alopecia. It's a disease that causes hair loss. And that is not makeup or an effect. He has no hair. He has no eyebrows. Which... gives him, you know, a legitimately weird look.
It's certainly unusual. Like, at first, for me anyway, at least initially, it was hard to put my finger on, like, is he shaving his head? Oh, no, it's eyebrows. He doesn't have any eyebrows.
It's the eyebrows. He doesn't have any eyebrows. Yeah. But in a way that, you know, that other actors with alopecia have ended up sort of playing horror characters or genre characters, what he's doing with it is just, the whole thing that he's doing is fantastic.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
hilarious and delightful and weird. And I think the interview that I read with him is that the sort of underlying thing is that he is, of course, a violent and, you know, sociopathic dude, but he also really wants to be helpful.
With this, like, candy coating.
Yeah. It's like, no, I'm going to... And the fact that he wants to be Californian, so the accent sort of slips away and comes back, and
I just
so good.
Yes, he's so fun. Like, yeah. He's legitimately one of the most interesting characters I've seen on TV in an age. And yeah, because he's trying so hard, and like, he wants to be helpful, but he didn't get to be this dude's right hand man without some stuff.
Without doing some shit, yeah.
Yeah, so...
And he brings a lipstick camera to a hit. I can't help it. I am Gadget Freak. I love Gak.
Gadget Freak, yeah. Oh, God, he's so... Like, and just when you get to the point where you're like, this is the most surreal thing I've ever seen, every time you start thinking that, it jumps completely off whatever resembles a rail in that particular moment. It goes completely off the rails.
Yeah.
So just wait, Mike. I'm here for you. As you continue to watch, just text me whatever it is that just happened. There's a bit later that makes me so, like, weirdly entertained, and the drama they wring out of a certain element in the rest of the season. I'll tell you that. There's a moment and you're just like, how am I on the edge of my seat as this is what's happening?
I cannot wait. And I also, of course, in citing the amazing cast on Barry, how can I forget Henry Winkler? Oh, my
right?
God.
Oh, who won an Emmy, I think?
Nominated for an Emmy, perhaps.
I think he won for Barry.
Maybe, which, I think you may be right.
Which is really funny, because he always he always kind of plays the good guy. And... Yeah. His character is not a good guy.
He's not.
Like, I don't want to say he characterized it himself. Apparently, Bill Hader likes to tell a story about how, Henry Winkler read through the script and was like, they were kind of having a hard time, like, nailing down his character, and then finally it clicked for him at some point, and he just looks up and he goes, "Oh, I'm supposed to be a raging a-hole, right?"
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Hader's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, gotcha. And that was it. And he was off to the races, and then he won an Emmy. So, which to me is hilarious. But it's The thing I really like about the show is that it is weird and delightful, but and it's like sprinkled with all this other weird and interesting stuff that kind of happens, you know, around the edges. But oops. Was that your desk?
That was my desk is not found. That was just the arm of my pop filter. But okay. I'm all right. We're okay.
Okay.
We haven't told everybody. By the way, my desk is falling apart. We'll get to that in a
Mike's
moment.
Desk is falling apart. But the other thing that I really like about this show is that there are some very small details about stuff that Bill Hader has talked about in interviews and things that that I thought was really interesting. Like he wears the bracelet. And it's the name of, like, his dear friend that was killed in action. Barry does. Barry wears this
yeah.
You know, because that's part of Barry's character, because that's a thing that actually, that people discharged from the service actually do. If that's as a way to honor someone, is they wear that name around their wrist. And some other little things like that, like, you can see, I think it's his dad, like, the flag from his dad's coffin, because his dad, from when his dad died or something, is what is up mm-hmm. on the wall in his house, and like some different little things like that, where Bill Hader had said, like, I went to people who served in the military and I asked them questions about making sure I got this right, because I wanted this to be part of his character, but I didn't want that to be a place where we were finding comedy. And so it's really interesting, to me, the care and the craftsmanship that went into, like, I'm making sure that this part is legit and the way it should be and how things work. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm mining this over here, you know,
yeah.
for complete comedy. But being able to make those lines so very clearly drawn and make sure, like, those small details are things that are correct and, you know, paying attention to that, as well as paying attention to, like, how am I going to get Milton from Office Space to get his butt kicked by a bunch of mafia guys
while I stand
on the patio and make plans with a girl? You know, like
legitimately the strong, you know, I sorry, Kelly, the strongest cast in premium cable right now. no slight intended cast
no,
of billions.
Because we love
you guys
billions.
Are amazing.
We
love
pink
you.
Puffy heart billions.
We love you a lot. But pound for pound, on a smaller, you know, less a smaller scope, smaller world show, mm-hmm. To have Henry Winkler, Stephen Root, and of course Bill Hader, Anthony Carrigan, and the rest of the crew, it's amazing. And the best, I mean, Henry Winkler and Stephen Root aren't really in, at least not yet, in what I've seen, they aren't in scenes together.
No,
like they haven't encountered one another. Because that would cause some sort of antimatter explosion.
yes.
And Stephen Root has been one of the quietest, funniest men on television.
Forever.
For decades. I mean, not quiet on news radio. News radio, Jimmy.
Well, but he
Jimmy
didn't
James
have
is a big character. But
he is. Well, he's a big dude when he's on screen, but he wasn't on screen all that much.
Yeah.
So, you know, he'd swoop in once in a while, create some chaos, and leave. And then, you know, and I will always have a soft spot for Jimmy James forever, because in the 90s, he showed up and told everybody he was, in fact, D.B. Cooper, and then left. that's why he had enough money to buy the station, and, like, it explained so much about him that he was D.B. Cooper. And at that point, D.B. Cooper wasn't the internet
part of the zeitgeist
ghost story
way, yeah.
that he is now, because there was no internet for people to go look him up on. And he was sort of local. This happened between Portland and Seattle. Dude hijacked a plane, took a bag of money, and leapt out of the plane. And every once in a while, somebody finds a suspicious looking $100 bill in the woods. And that's about it. Nobody has any idea what happened. Nobody knows who the dude was. Like, people keep, you know, we keep hearing stories about it because people keep trying to crack the case, and just nothing. And it is one of the most baffling things to ever happen, and it happened here. So I've heard various stories about D.B. Cooper for, like, my whole life, and then all of a sudden on TV, this dude's like, well, yeah, because that's where I got the bag of money, you know, when I jumped out of the plane. Like,
when I jumped out of that plane.
What? Like, is he saying he's D.B. Cooper? And, like, I'm like, is he saying he's D.B. Cooper? And then he says, like, yeah, I used to go by D.B. Cooper or something like that. Bye, you know, whatever, and, like, leaves. And I'm like,
Danny Cooper, whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a throwaway.
It just blew my mind that little moment, and then he leaves, and like, oh, yeah, and like, you know, I mean, he's iconic in Office Space. You know, this, welcome to the Barry podcast by Mike and Kelly.
You know, of all the shows that deserve a podcast, but I'd have to catch up.
Yes. And I'm here for you. Feel free to text me when something crazy happens and you're like, oh.
I will be ready for it. I appreciate the warning. However, it is not the Barry podcast. It is the After Show with Mike and Kelly. There's so much stuff happening in the worlds of our imagination. We have Catalina that has finally rolled out. We have
I don't have it.
I have yet to upgrade any machines in my possession to it. But I'm gonna.
I know it's a thing weekend. That exists in the world. I have heard tell, and that's where I'm leaving it for now.
I do need to do a 32-bit audit and figure out. I think the thing I'm going to miss the most, or the thing I need to find a way to keep without losing it, is the Levelator. And I know a number of people are.
That's.
That's crucial. They're running Mojave virtual machines.
Yeah.
Or similar approaches, Windows 10 virtual machines in some cases, to do that, which, you know, you do what you got to do. However, I think the bigger news in our mutual worlds is that Kelly has a new phone.
Yes, I do. I got an iPhone 11 Pro because what? Camera. Mm-hmm. And I got the white one. I'm going to always be Team Hoth phone, even though there's no bezel on the new one. Because I just left Team Home Button. Is where we're at, for people who don't remember. My previous phone was an 8. And so I'm new to Face ID, and it's still weird to me to have the screen be all black, because it's had a white bezel for me since the 4S was a thing, because as soon as they came out with white ones, I got a white phone, and I just never looked back. Mm-hmm. So I have a Hoth phone in a clear case, and it makes me very happy. The camera is bonkers. I have taken pictures both with and without the machine-assisted nighttime photography mode. I don't know what they're calling it, but
whatever
they're calling it. It should be, your picture looks like it was taken at noon and not midnight. That's the actual name.
Wow.
And I took a picture and it looked like daytime. It looked like I had taken this picture in perhaps late afternoon or early morning. Not like I took it at, you know, 9 p.m. well after the sun had set. It was very dark. I continue to marvel at the camera. And like, there was a full moon a few days ago. And when the moon was full, we had some clouds rolling through the sky here. And so I went, well, everybody talks about how great the camera is. Like, maybe this time I'll get a picture of the moon and not a blur on a black field, you know. And so I sort of put it up there and went to the extra zoom, you know, and hit the button a couple of times, and I got pictures of the moon in the sky in the nighttime that matched what I was seeing with my eyeball.
Wow.
And that has never happened for me on a phone. I've gotten a few nice pictures with a higher end digital camera. Like, we have a DSLR. And I've gotten some good pictures that way on a tripod, you know, with some stuff. Never like just taking my hand and pointing it in that direction and pulling the trigger and waiting like that. I've never gotten a picture like that. So I am super excited to use this in lower light situations. Like, you're at a restaurant that's maybe not the brightest. You want a picture of that really awesome looking cocktail, which is a thing I do a lot. Because, you know, tiki bars are not known for the brightness of their lighting. Let's just say that.
No, not traditionally.
But they are known for the elaborateness of their cocktails and the interestingness of the vessels those cocktails arrive in. So I am excited to be able to take cool pictures like that. I'm looking forward to pictures at Disneyland where it, you know, when it's not going to matter what the light looks like and that sort of thing. And I think... it's going to be a lot of fun. The Face ID thing is still weird to me. I still, at least one time a day, it's been about a week now that I've been totally moved into my phone, at least once a day, I stick my thumb on the bottom and go, oh, am I holding my phone upside down? Oh. And then remember that I just have to look at it, that I don't need my thumb for anything.
These useless appendages at the end of your wrists are no longer your password.
They're not required access anymore, and it's weird.
They're not mandatory.
What I will tell you the one complaint I have, and it is very small, and it is apparently I was the person using 3D Touch.
Yeah, so the was one? I.
Oh.
I was that person.
Okay.
I was also that person.
I felt like I was the only person because everybody was like excited it was leaving.
Now it makes me confused when I try to do things.
Yeah, and I'm like, because no?
Of course in iOS 13 it's gone even on the devices that formerly supported it.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah. And the reason I find that frustrating is because the stuff I used it for, I really, really liked. So, like, I used it for favorites and stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on the phone app to call somebody. If I had to use my hand, if I had to interact with it without just saying, hey, lady, I need to call this person on speaker or whatever. If I actually had to interact with my phone using my dramatically less useful appendages, then I would, you know, pop through to favorites and do that all the time. And it was great. And so that's been sort of weird. But otherwise, it's great. I got the middle one. I got a 256. So I have room for loads and loads and loads of unbelievable looking pictures. So that's been pretty great on my end. Let's talk about the new or lack thereof technology on your end, because apparently it starts with your desk and works its way outward.
It works its way upward now. So I have placed a preliminary order for my 11 Pro, which I am looking forward
Yay.
To.
Yay! What color?
And black, I believe. Okay. Yeah. And it was one I was struggling with because it's my personal phone. I have a work phone. The work phone is an 8, mm-hmm. 8 plus. Do I strictly need a personal phone? No. Should I have one and start doing some more mindful and deliberate uncoupling of my personal crap and my work phone? Yeah, I probably should. I think I've mentioned this on the show before. Maybe I haven't mentioned this on the show before. I now use my phone as an NFC reader for a glucose monitor, which Oh-ho. Is stuck to my arm.
We have not talked about this.
We have not talked about this. So, so not yet a sponsor, Abbott Labs, and probably never going to be one, produces a whole range of glucose sensors and monitors for people who are diabetic, borderline diabetic, pre-diabetic, or whatever. And in my case, I spoke to my doctor and said, I think I would like to try this continuously available monitor, which is called a Freestyle Libre.
Okay.
And it is a disc that is stuck to my arm, mm-hmm. Temporary. It's not permanently implanted, but
it's
stuck.
Like a week or something at a time?
It's 2 weeks, 14 days. But it's adhesive. It's got a tiny, tiny little sensor needle, so it is actually piercing the skin. But mm-hmm. honestly, you know, truthfully, you don't notice. It's not. It is so thin and so small, so short that it's not perceptible. It's not doing blood glucose. It's doing testing the interstitial fluid. So there's some subtle differences, and there's some warnings and caveats. But long story short, you have an 8 hour continuously available record of your blood glucose mm-hmm. over time. How do you get this off the little disc, which is approximately the size of a quarter, and onto something where you can read it? Well, it's NFC, so you could use the hardware reader that Abbott makes and provides, or you can use your phone, nice. Which is very handy because if you use your phone, it syncs it to the cloud, and it's right there on your phone. Your phone is always with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so this, for me, has been great. It's been transformative. It's allowed me to have a much better sense of what it is that I do and eat, and the behaviors that help or hurt my glucose control. This is mm-hmm. all great, but I'm using my work phone to do this.
Yeah,
Yeah, and it's like, that's the point where you sort of say, okay, pictures of the kids, yeah, all right, whatever. Actual personal medical data? Yeah. No. No. There's just, like, there's no good reason
there's not,
to have right. that on a device. Well, there's not. There's not. We know this. So I could put it on the iPhone, on the older iPhone 7. I was like, you know what? This is a justification. This is the excuse I was looking for to get the 11 Pro that mm-hmm. I want, because I too want an ultra wide lens and a regular and a telephoto lens, and I too want to be able to take pictures of the moon by hand in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. Zach Honig, formerly of Engadget, now of The Points Guy, posted to Instagram an iPhone 11 Pro shot of the Aurora Borealis.
Oh, man.
In Alaska, which he said was a 3-second handheld exposure
mm-hmm.
using night mode. And it's ridiculous.
It is. I mean,
it's like... It's,
yeah,
it's
that 3-second exposure is like... It's a Polaroid, because you watch it happen on your phone, on the screen, as the 3 seconds goes by. So you watch it go from like nothing to what looks like you took a picture in the daytime.
And this is the power of a software platform that has a camera in front of it, or mm-hmm. a camera that is backed by software. It enables you to do this kind of crazy ass stuff.
It officially, I used to carry around a phone that could take pictures. I now carry around a camera that can take phone calls.
A camera that can receive texts and play Angry Birds.
I get it. Yeah, this was the line. Like, I took good pictures with my 8. They were good pictures.
Yeah.
And these are amazing pictures.
This is a different animal entirely.
Entirely. So. And it is unbelievable to watch. Like, one of my cousins was like, my phone broke. And I went down to the phone store and, you know, I have an 11 Pro now. and she was like, it takes really good pictures. And I said, no, wait till like 8 o'clock tonight and go outside and take some pictures.
And did she?
And she did. And she, yeah, same. the same sort of holy moly, like I had when I was outside taking pictures in the dark.
I mean, and interestingly enough, one of my favorite things to do with my DSLR is, it's a Nikon and it has night portrait mode, which is a combination of a long exposure and then a fill flash for detail.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates, and I can share, maybe I'll throw a photo or two in the show notes. It creates this beautiful, you know, this wonderful portrait effect of, you know, people in, without the sort of crazy flash look that mm-hmm. You get when you take pictures of people at night. You know, lovely backgrounds, very soft, but then this beautiful sort of lightly blurred, lightly impressionistic portrait. And I love shooting that. It just like it comes with a 35 millimeter prime, 50 millimeter equivalent. They look gorgeous. They're just delightful pictures and they turn out great. And now it's going to be like every picture I take with my phone is going to be like that. It's going to be just, mm-hmm. oh my God, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
So yes. So that is plausibly on order. I'm waiting for, there's some items I'm waiting to figure out. But that's going to happen. But in the meantime, I've got kind of a nightmare situation here I have to deal with. This is a problem. My desk, it's a small, cheap IKEA desk. So, I mean, it's not a major loss, but
how
the
many
back,
moves?
Two.
Okay.
Maybe.
It's at the end of its functional life then.
Well, I mean, I can take everything off and just sort of tighten the back support. But what's happening now is it's just like sliding over to the side and I'm concerned it's going to collapse with all my stuff on it. So,
yeah.
So I need, this is a project for tomorrow. I need to take everything out and turn it upside down and fix it, or move a desk from, there's actually a not unnice desk upstairs in the guest room that I could steal and use down here if I had to. But the desk is falling apart. The computer upon it needs to be reconsidered. So as we talked a few months ago, this is an iMac of a certain vintage, 2012, I want to say, mid-2011. This is a 21-inch mid-2011 iMac. Mm-hmm. It has served me well. It is an i5. It has 12 gig of RAM. It had an aftermarket SSD. Still has the original hard drive in there as well. It's a workhorse. It's been very happy over the years. And over the summer, it became dramatically unstable. It turned out, or it seems to have been, and dramatically unstable to the point like it would quietly reboot itself at night and come back up, not finding the OS or finding the old OS on the other drive. None of which is good. And then I would have to, you know, option boot it and mm-hmm. force it to boot from the SSD, and then it would be fine for a while, and then the same thing would happen a few days later. So, long troubleshooting story short, it appears that the Thunderbolt chain on this machine, which included a Belkin dock that had a bunch of USB drives plugged into it, it appears that that Belkin dock, once the Belkin dock was taken out of the chain, everything pretty much returned to normal. So the machine is still fine, still now once again behaving normally. And this machine, as loyal listeners know, is close to, but not quite, at the end of the set of iMac models that support target display mode,
mm-hmm.
where you can take another Thunderbolt device and use the iMac as a monitor.
Right.
Which I love, which is great for me, because both my current work laptop and my previous work laptop, both of them work with this iMac as an external monitor. It's great. It saves me desk space, and which is at a premium since my desk is collapsing into a singularity at the moment. I love it. It's very useful. It fits my workflow and my work habits of being able to use it as an external monitor when I'm home. And it's all great. If I upgrade it, I lose that functionality. Of course, this machine cannot even run Mojave. It's stuck on High Sierra. It will never run Catalina. It will never run Mojave. It is not supported. And it is an 8-year-old machine, mm-hmm. roughly at this point. So that's you know, that's deeply middle-aged, on the verge of, you know, being actually obsolete. I find now that the little annoyances of running, you know, two and or three operating systems back, like the emoji picker being wrong, little stuff like that. It's like, why is this broke? Oh, right. So it's starting to get to that point. But as you know, and as our listeners know, I've insisted I don't want to give up target display mode, because it is so useful and so relevant to the things I need to do with this machine that I don't want to let it go. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh, just get a monitor and a Mac Mini and a Switch. I'm like, okay, I could do that, but I don't really want to. Anyway, what was it? Yesterday, we found out about something, or earlier this week, we found out about something that might moot this entire discussion.
Yes.
So we all, I think most of our listeners know about Luna Display.
Yeah.
Correct, probably. So there's... Duet is a... So there's a couple of solutions for taking your Mac screen and extending it to an iOS device, presumably an iPad. You could do this with a phone, but why would you? One of those solutions is software only. It's called Duet.
Mm-hmm.
One of the solutions is new in Catalina, and it's called Sidecar. So that's Apple's Sherlocking of Duet.
Yes.
And the other is actually a little different, because it is a hardware dongle. It's an actual secondary, you know, little set of display hardware that then is using the iOS device wirelessly, which is Luna Display. So that comes with a little dongle that's either USB 2, USB 3, or USB-C. You plug it into your primary machine, your Mac, and then it extends the display to your iOS device. So, this week, the fine folks at Luna Display announced that they are now doing that, but Mac to Mac. So if you have a modern day iMac and a modern laptop, you can still do the exact same thing that I am doing now with a Thunderbolt cable, but with this handy dandy little Luna widget. To me, this seems like a pretty good deal. Have you heard anything about this yet, Kelly?
All I've heard is that they're doing it, and that I think one news article I saw on it, I didn't get a chance to read very much, but one news article I saw was sort of when you get Sherlocked, like, there are a number of ways to respond, and one of them is to pivot slightly and sort of expand what it is that you do. And I thought that was a really interesting idea. Luna display is fantastic. I've only used it briefly. There are other people I know who swear by it for loads of things. And it sounds really cool to do this Mac to Mac thing. Because that doesn't seem like something Apple would be interested in doing, even, you know, because the number of people who need it is probably not very big. But now that it's available, thanks to somebody like Luna Display, I think it'll be a lot more widely used than it would be if it was just something that Apple rolled out as part of the OS, because it wouldn't be as big a deal to people.
Yeah. And I think the question they asked themselves was, what if we could turn people's e-waste, as in their idle computers, into extra screen space? Mm-hmm. So Mac-to-Mac mode allows any Mac as a second display. The primary Mac needs El Capitan 10.11 or later. The secondary Mac requires Mac OS 10.8. You need the latest version of Luna Display. And internet connection is necessary, as USB is only supported for Mac to iPad. So it's 25% off tonight. So I don't know if that's going to help our listeners, because yeah. I don't think the show is going to be ready by tonight. But I might go ahead and do this just because it seems like at some point I'm going to need it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention, partly I think this is terribly interesting, but also, like, one of the things about it is, like you said, it goes back to 10.13 for the one machine and 10.8 mm-hmm. for the other. And for perspective, we're on 10.15 now. Well, some people are on 10.15. Catalina, the one that was just released, is 10.15. And so this supports all the way back to 10.8. And that's thoughtful, because you have to make a conscious decision to be able to support an operating system back that far. That is an actual decision. They didn't just whip something up and got it for free. Like, you have to consciously go back. It's much easier to make something like this and have it only work on Catalina, or maybe Mojave and Catalina, and that's it. So to go back that far really says something about them being serious about, you know, e-waste. Well, maybe I don't have to toss this iMac or figure out a thing to do with it or whatever, you know, because it goes back far enough.
Yeah. I mean, that's a conscious design choice.
Right. So somebody sat down and said, how far back can we realistically make this go?
Yeah. And it's basically AirPlay. I mean, it's 10.8 Mountain Lion. So I think that implies that the Mac could be an AirPlay target. Maybe, but I mean, this is, for me, I'm buying it, because I think the flexibility, it's 25% off right now, so that's $52, mm-hmm. saving $17.49. This is going to give me this is going to remove one of those barriers for me at the point that I do finally need to say goodnight to old paint, put her out to pasture. Whatever's next. Mm-hmm. will be giving me actually a better experience, because I won't have to hook up a cable between these two things.
Right.
All I have to do is hit the software and go. I mean, it's not quite the same as Target Display Mode, because Target Display Mode is fantastic and transparent and works really wonderfully.
Yes.
And I don't have to think about it. But I mean, I don't have to think about it to the point that in some cases I forget that it's actually the laptop that's driving the display. I'm like, where are all my drives? Where's the Drobo? But I think it for, you know, for $70 or in this case $50, mm-hmm. this is worth it. This is right. actually going to give me what I need.
Especially if you have an older machine like yours that still has a valid place in whatever workflow it is that you've got.
In the workflow, right.
Yeah. That's the part that's important is like, you know, maybe I can't update it to the latest and greatest, but you may not have to if you have another computer that's more recent and now you can have all that screen real estate mm-hmm. for, you know, double, you know, maybe it's double the real estate or sometimes more than double, you know, if it's a laptop that you're hooking up. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I really thought this was a great next step for Luna Display to go, how can we, like, you know, we kind of got Sherlocked. So now what? You know,
now what are we going to do? What are we going to do, boys?
Yeah. And it's brilliant. Like I can't think of a better way for them to have continued to be viable and not just sort of fade into obscurity and dismantle, you know, they could have just packed it in.
Yeah. They're leveraging the hardware they're already building and they're just, you know, they're just creating software that's going to enable you to target those other devices. So bully for them. Luna Display, not yet a sponsor. Mm-hmm. Thank you for putting in the effort to do this. We appreciate it, and I personally am going to get value out of this. I promise mm-hmm. you, this is awesome.
Well, here's what you should do with a little bit of the discount that you got on Luna Display: is go to St. Clair Software, which is stclairsoft.com, and get Go 64 because it will do the 32-bit audit for you.
There you go.
It's fantastic. It's so easy. Everything's really clearly laid out and it shows you like this is 32-bit. This is not. It's very obvious and it makes it very easy to follow. So even if you're not super technical or you don't have the patience to like sit down and audit, like you don't have to. This tool will do it for you and then it will show you everything. And then, you know, what you do from there, you know, is kind of on you. But at least you'll have a very clear idea going in of what either upgrades or alternatives you need to track down. Mm-hmm. So far, the only one I know for certain is Levelator. That is a thing that people still use that
as previously mentioned.
Yeah, that does not immediately. I do not immediately have a 64-bit alternative to Levelator come to mind. However, there are some other ways around, you know, using Levelator.
That's what I was going to mention because earlier in the show, since I said, you know, a number of people using Catalina have built virtual machines, mm-hmm. The Fine Feathered Friends over at Tidbits have an article specifically about, setting up a Mojave VM mm-hmm. for the apps, which, you know, are not going to make the journey, into the East with the elves.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably not the right metaphor. But in any case,
it's not because they go into the West.
Into the West. Dang it.
But also, so close. This isn't a, you know, off to Valhalla kind of an ending. This is an Old Yeller kind of an ending for these 32-bit apps. And I hate to say it, but, you know, like we all survived the iOS 32-bit apocalypse. So I feel like we can all survive this one, too. It's really a matter of stopping and thinking. And that's the problem that always happens is people pull the trigger on a new upgrade. And then, you know, the thing that I always think of is, you know, I used to do support. You know, I've done a lot of tech support for a lot of different things. And somebody always says, well, I upgraded to the newest operating system and this is broken. Well, we have a giant notice on our website that says not to because it's broken and we're working on it or we're not. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I need it. I use it every day to make money. Well, then you should have stopped and thought about this before. You know, not that this is a thing that you can generally say in a customer support or a tech support reply, but you should have thought about that before you pulled the trigger. Because if you need it to make money every day, you need to make extra sure that everything's ready to go. So, in fact, when we talked about prepping for Catalina over on the Daily Observations podcast, One of the things Dave Hamilton pointed out is that he keeps a carbon copy cloner image of the last version of operating system before he goes to the next one. So he will make like a carbon copy cloner of Mojave before he updates to Catalina, because on the off chance, and it's a bootable copy, bit level copy of his disk.
Yeah.
And then that way, if he needs it, he can spin up a virtual machine and fire up that drive, and everything is as it was, you know, the last day he was running Mojave or whatever, and get to everything that way. And so that's, that was one of his tips, was create that, that, complete disk image and then stash it somewhere just in case you need it.
Yeah. That's, and that's always a good idea.
Yeah. That's a good idea anyway. So, in fact, that was the thing I was talking to the, I did a talk last weekend for the Suburban Chicago Apple Users Group. And one of the things we talked about, the overall theme of the talk was risk and the different kinds of risk that you face. You know, there's phishing, there's, you know, somebody gaining unauthorized physical access to your device, there's people who call you on the phone to try to gain access to your device, there's, you know, hardware failure, which is also a risk. And so one of the things we talked about was backup methods, and that was one that I pointed out, was that Dave had mentioned when he gets ready to go to a new operating system, that's what he does, specifically so that he has that last operating system, particularly in a case like Catalina is going to stop running stuff, you know, because he was talking about how, you know, he's always got an app somewhere that he uses, you know, once every 6 months or once a year, and we'll completely forget about it until it's time to break it out, and then break it out and it doesn't work on the new operating system, and you have to go back, you know, to find the one where it actually does work. Like, I only need it for 10 minutes. It's not worth finding an alternative. I'll just spin up this VM, do what I need to do, and then move on with my life. And, you know, in some cases, that's all you have to do. But in other cases, it can be, it can get complicated quickly. So it's really just a matter of like being honest and being aware. Like, go to Catalina if you want to, but make sure that that decision is as informed as it can be. And Go64 will help you do that.
So we have Go64. We have the VM article from our friends at Tidbits. We have make yourself a bootable backup, Lunar Display, iPhone 11 Pro. What else is there even to talk about at this point? Oh my gosh.
I got my house painted.
Yeah, well, that's good. we survived the Jewish holidays.
Hey!
Yes. It was a busy season, but we made it through. And I, tell you what, I went to Sonoma for a wedding last weekend, and it was delightful.
That's awesome.
I'd never been to a wedding in Sonoma, and it was great. Highly recommended. It's very much wedding central. It is a part of the Marital Industrial Complex.
It is.
And for all of that, it was fantastic. And it was a winery wedding, and we did wine tasting, and we had a straight up marvelous time. And while just as a reminder that the world, for all its size, is a very, very small place, I was on the day after the wedding, the celebrants and all their friends and family were at a winery in Santa Rosa, California called La Crema. And so I was, as I often do when I'm in a new and visually exciting place, I was taking pictures of the scenery at La Crema, and I was posting them to a reasonably toxic social network. I posted a picture, said, here I am at La Crema. And in the replies to that picture, my old friend, high school old friend, so known for approximately 30-something years, Jessica Ruskin, pops in and says, are you in Santa Rosa right now? Are you at the winery? Because that's crazy. I am at my job, which is 10 minutes away from the winery, and I'm going to be here until 5 if you want to come by.
What?
And I think to myself, that's crazy. And I also think, what could her job possibly be that she knows exactly what time she's going to... Well, some people like leave right at 5. I don't know. But I read on, and she said, I'm the director of education at the Charles M. Schulz Museum here in Santa Rosa.
Ah!
Charles M. Schulz, of course, the creator of the iconic comic strip Peanuts.
Oh.
Charlie Brown, Linus, Sally, Lucy, Snoopy, Peppermint Patty, and Marcy, the whole gang.
Oh.
Snoopy's brother Spike from Needles.
Spike.
And Woodstock. So I said, you know, I've had a few glasses of wine, but I'm still going to do this. So I hopped in a car, I hopped in an Uber, and I went to the museum to go say hello. And it was delightful.
I can't even imagine. I'm so jealous.
I was so glad that she thought to reach out and say, I'm glad that you're here and you should come say hello. Because Santa Rosa, you know, has its wonderful attractions, but it's a small town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, lots of people come through to speak at the museum and to visit the museum, and she sees people all the time. But it's also not that common for someone from high school to just pop up and say, hey, I'm in Santa Rosa. What?
Exactly. So
it was great. And it reminded me that for all of the real legitimate, you know, societal challenges that we have around integrating these new ways of communicating with one another into our polity and our society, and making sure that we don't, you know, destroy one another in the process of figuring this out, that sometimes you have really nice things happen. And we see this, of course, also on Twitter all the time. For all of the unpleasantness, there's also these wonderful moments of grace and of connection. So I was glad to do that.
That was the one thing. The last time I was in Santa Rosa, I was there with you. And we play. Were you there for Cards Against Humanity? You'd remember. Jeff Gamet and I played an infamous round of Cards Against Humanity with Allison Sheridan. Sometime over many beverages, I will tell you the story of playing Cards Against Humanity with Allison Sheridan. And we were in Santa Rosa and I wanted to go to the museum and we didn't have time. And I was very sad I didn't get to go. So I'm betting the museum was pretty great.
The museum was, I saw it fairly briefly, but it was great.
It seems like it would be great.
It's a lot of fun, and they've replicated his studio, so you can walk up and see his stuff. And there's a lot of the original art is there. And of course, you know, all the strips are duplicated, and the main floor exhibit when I was there was all about summer camp. So it was all strips about going off to summer camp being at summer camp. So yes, recommendation of the week, the Charles M. Schulz Museum in Santa Rosa, California. If you are there and you see Jessica, tell her hi from the after show. Tell her hi from Mike and Kelly. And speaking of hi from Mike and Kelly, hello, phone boy. Hello, Brittany. Hello, other Kelly. Hello, Lenny. Good congratulations on your move. Good luck in the new home.
Hi, Info Driveway.
Hi, Chris Fuller.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Dave McGee. Hi, Deidre. And who are we forgetting?
Hi, Javi.
Why not?
We'll see.
It's always
he's kind of busy. He's up to his eyeballs in dark crystal right now.
Up to his eyeballs in dark crystal. Sounds like a drug reference. Really isn't.
Yeah, hashtag not a euphemism.
he's up to his eyeballs in Muppet gut.
Yeah, that also not a euphemism.
Not in fact a euphemism.
Yeah. I think... Hi, Tony Walla.
Oh, yeah. Can't forget Tony.
And, because I know. And, by the way... I would like to give a special shout out to the people who, when they are listening to the show, go on Twitter and at us a hello back, because it is a small thing for you to go and do that person that says hello. But it makes my day when you do that. And so you should know that 3 seconds of like, hi Verso, hi Mike T. Rose, like legitimately, that makes me happy every time. Because it lets me know that somebody actually listened to what we were doing, and that always will please me to no end. So again, if you would like to join the list of people who get hellos on the show, all you have to do is at us and tell us that you are a listener, and we will say hello to you. It's really that simple. It's not a secret club. It's really the opposite of a secret club, because you have to like go out in public and let us know that you are a listener.
And in fact, if we forget to mention you in a given week, we apologize. We will try to remember.
I will apologize in advance, and please don't be shy about reminding us.
We love all our listeners equally. We have no favorites. But we do, as Kelly said, we do appreciate hearing from you. And we would love to hear from you if you try either Lunar Display, Go64 from St. Clair Soft. If you have a new phone and you want to share your amazing multi-second night exposures, and we would love to see them. We will happily share them with our audience. And other than that, Kelly, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter occasionally, I guess, because I'm not there near like what I used to be. You should find me on micro.blog. I am Verso in both places. And you can generally hear me on the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast. I am there 5 mornings a week. And occasionally I pop up over on The Incomparable doing various things, including a very recent episode of Fiasco.
I will have to go listen for that. I actually did listen to a recent episode of The Incomparable on the flight back from California, because I saw Mr. Jason Snell, hi Jason, mention that they were talking about one of my favorite movies of all time, which I then proceeded to buy on iTunes, download onto my iPad, and watch on the flight, and then listen to the podcast, the Robert Redford film Sneakers.
Sneakers, that was such a good episode.
It was a great episode, it was very funny, and they captured really the what a lot of what makes that film so delightful. So good job, Incomparabilians. And recommend that everybody go track down that episode. You can find me on Twitter at Mike T. Rose, also on micro.blog at also Mike T. Rose. You will also be able to find me in San Francisco the week before Thanksgiving, not the week that includes Thanksgiving, but the week before that, the week of November 17th, I believe, because I'll be there for Dreamforce, which is Salesforce's big conference and customer event. So I will be there all that week. If you are at Dreamforce and you would love to, and you want to come and find me and say hi, please do. I would greatly appreciate it. And even if you're not going to say hi, I hope you come and join me and 100,000 plus of your closest friends and family at the gathering of the tribes there. We will be back in a couple of weeks. Thank you all for bearing with our holiday break. If you celebrated the Jewish holidays, we wish you a very happy New Year, L'Shana Tova. If you are celebrating Halloween, which we will possibly have another show in by then, we hope you have a very spooky and delightful Halloween, and to all, a very good night.